As we begin to approach the climax of our Lenten journey, we should reflect on original sin, the source of our woes due to the fall of Adam and Eve. I have for you today a short essay by G.K. Chesterton on that topic, on original sin, and it is especially relevant today in our own times. He makes the point that modern science in his day was making statements about the order of things that sounded like statements about original sin. Statements that were in some way similar to that made by the Catholic faith, but that these statements in the secular realm were, of course, inverted in their logic, for they weren't Catholic statements at all. Considering this, bear in mind the modern practice many in the broader society have of making statements about a sort of secular version of original sin, on a variety of topics with a variety of corresponding claims. The language of sin is something that predominates our societies today. In that same way that Chesterton speaks here about, in an inversion of the Catholic logic and concept of original sin. Truly, for all the times man tries to escape the shadow of Adam and Eve, man inevitably finds himself continuing to run back to one of the most critical events in human history. Think about that. And for those of you not aware, of course, Chesterton was a very close friend and confidant of Hilaire Belloc, a personal hero of mine, and I'm going to try to get back to regularly on the weekends having something from Chesterton or Belloc, maybe once every month or every other month. Anyway, enough from me. Have a blessed Sunday. Now, on to Mr. Chesterton. On Original Sin by G.K. Chesterton. Once upon a time, when Mr. H.G. Wells was setting forth on his varied and splendid voyage from Utopia to Utopia, he announced as a sort of watchword or war cry that the New World would have nothing to do with the idea of original sin. He did not speak, and indeed, there was no reason for him to speak, about his other beliefs or unbeliefs. He had not then compared the Trinity to a dance, but neither had he called adoring multitudes to the shrine of the invisible king. But standing at the end of the great scientific 19th century, he thought it time to announce that the one doctrine he did not believe in was original sin. Standing at the beginning of the still more scientific 20th century, Mr. Aldous Huxley calmly announces the one doctrine he does believe in is original sin. He may be a skeptic or a heretic about many things, but on that point he is quite orthodox. He may not hold many theological dogmas, but about this dogma he is quite dogmatic. There is one fragment of the ancient creed which he not only clings to, but declares to be necessary to all clear minds of the new generation, and that is the very fragment which Mr. Wells threw away 30 years ago, as something that would never be needed anymore. The stone that the builder of Utopia rejected. It is not a mere verbal coincidence that original thinkers believe in original sin, for really original thinkers like to think about origins. That should be obvious even to the negative thinkers of the 19th century tradition, who for two or three generations claimed all originality, all novelty, all destabilizing change of thought for a book called The Origin of Species. But it is even more true of moral discovery than of moral discovery, and is even more true of the 20th century reaction than that of the 19th century upheaval. Men who wish to get down to fundamentals perceive that there is a fundamental problem of evil. Men content to be more superficial are also content with a superficial fuss and bustle of improvement. The man in the mere routine of modern life is content to say that a modern gallows is a relatively humane instrument, or that a modern cat-o'-nine-tails is a milder instrument than an ancient Rome flagellum. But the original thinker will ask why any scourge or gibbet was ever needed, or ever even alleged to be needed. And that brings the original thinker back to original sin, for that is not affected as a universal thing, by whether we approve or disapprove of the particular things. Whether we call it infamous tyranny or inevitable restraint, there is some sort of sin either in the scourger or the scourged. Nevertheless, I often feel that the original thinker is not quite original enough. I mean that he does not get quite so near to the truth as the old tradition could take him. I say it without arrogance, for many of us owe the truth as much to tradition as to originality. But I am often struck by the fact that original thinkers originate trains of thought, but do not finish them. It is the great trouble with the advance that they will not advance any further. Now, Mr. Aldous Huxley sees very clearly that medieval religion was more realistic than modern idealism and optimism. He says that the latest scientific view is more like the old Catholic view than was the intervening illusion of the Romantic movement. But he adds that the scientific view of man necessitates a sort of original sin, if it be only the residuum of his animal ancestry. Now, that is exactly where I should like him to advance a step further, and he does not. For sin, whatever else it is not merely the dregs of a bestial existence. It is something more subtle and spiritual, and is in some way connected with the very supremacy of the human spirit. Mr. Huxley must know well enough that this is so with the most execrable sins, such as often figure in his own admirable satires. It is not merely a matter of letting the ape and tiger die, for apes are not Pharisees, nor are tigers prigs. The elephant does not turn up his long nose at everything with any superior intention, and the totally unjust charge of hypocrisy might well be resented by any really sensitive and thin-skinned crocodile. The giraffe might be called a highbrow, but he is not really supercilious about his powers of uplift. Man has scattered his own vices as well as virtues very arbitrarily among the animals, and there may be no more reason to accuse the peacock of pride than to accuse the pelican of charity. The worst things in man are only possible to man. At least we must confine their existence to men, unless we are prepared to admit the existence of demons. There is thus another truth in the original conception of original sin. Since even in sinning, man originated something. His body may have come from animals, and his soul may be torn in pieces by all sorts of doctrinal disputes and quarrels among men. But roughly speaking, it is quite clear that he did manufacture out of the old mud or blood of material origins, whatever mixture of more mysterious elements, a special and mortal poison. That poison is his own recipe. It is not merely decaying animal matter. That poison is most poisonous where there are fine scientific intellects or artistic imaginations to mix it. It is just as likely to be at its best, that is, at its worst, at the end of a civilization as at the beginning. Of this sort are all the hideous corruptions of culture. The pride, the disorders, the intellectual cruelties, the horrors of emotional exhaustion. You cannot explain that monstrous fruit by saying that our ancestors were arboreal, save indeed as an allegory of the tree of knowledge. The poison can take the form of every sort of culture, as, for instance, bacteria culture. But the poison itself has always been there. Indeed, it is as old as any memory of man. Wherefore, we have to posit of it that it was also the human source and fountainhead, that it was in the beginning, or as the old theology affirms, original. I suggest, therefore, with great respect, that it is not even now a case of having to admit that the old religion had come very near to the truth of the most modern science. It is a rather case of the most modern science having come very near to the truths of the old religion, but not quite near enough.